Willkommen zu den Bloodthirsty Vegetarians mit ihren Gastgebern Richard Wilgosch und Joan Tallarico. Bleiben Sie dran und Sie werden mit Sicherheit einiges erfahren über Diskussionen und Debatten aus dem Umfeld von Kultur und Medien. Unbequeme und dennoch anregende Konfrontationen, politische Streifzüge zur Linken, zur Rechten und in der Mitte, sowie ein ständiges Hinterfragen von Stereotypen, das ist unser Metier. Unsere Vorliebe für gutes Essen und Trinken wird ebenso Einfluss auf die Programmgestaltung haben wie neue und alte musikalische Edelsteine. Also bitte, bleiben Sie eingeschaltet.
No, this is not German public radio.
Willkommen.
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 Herr Tallarico.
Herr Tallarico?
Yeah. No, you have reached the Bloodthirsty Vegetarians, or for those who prefer to not have the article there, Bloodthirsty Vegetarians.
Yeah, this is John Tallarico.
And Rich Wilgus, as my good friend Rainer Maria Wiener said in our cool German intro. We thought we'd throw you a little curveball there. It's just a little unusual. It tickled me pink when I thought of it, and I actually did it without John's knowledge, and I emailed him an MP3.
I said, wait a minute, who's this guy?
Actually, he said, you know what's really weird about it, Rich? It's in German.
What's really weird is my name in German.
Well, I just asked him to pronounce it the way, you know, look at that name and pronounce it the way you think it would be pronounced as a guy who grew up in Berlin.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. Yeah. I like when he says Richard, you know, it's Richard. Such a German.
Yeah, my name's not John, it's Joan.
Yeah, well, that trip to Switzerland did you some good.
Yeah. So, what's happening?
Well, I don't know, we got feedback.
Did we
have a sound effect for feedback yet? Yes, okay, the feedback is here. We talked about a lot of stuff on the last show, and apparently it elicited a response from our favorite listener in Canada. You have a love-hate relationship with her about the whole animal protein thing, as I recall.
Yeah.
Well, she says some very flattering stuff, actually.
Not and, about me, though.
Well, there's some flattering stuff about you. She said you had a sexy voice.
Hey there.
Hey, baby. Okay, what does she say? She says, it's amazing how much your show is like the old famous CBC radio show, Danny Finkelman. Actually, I'll read it exactly the way she wrote it. I'm paraphrasing here. It's amazing how much your show is like the old CBC radio Danny Finkelman show I was telling you about. We were conversing about Danny Finkelman in email. Except yours is even better because we can hear both sides of the conversation. Apparently, this Danny Finkelman guy used to have a show called Finkelman's 45s, and he had this extensive record collection, would play all this obscure stuff. He had a nationwide syndicated show on Saturday night and had quite a loyal, rabid cult following. They love the guy.
Was he like that guy in Ghost World where he would collect vintage discs and sell them out of his garage?
That's exactly what he did on the air. And he apparently would have, like, we would occasionally hear Frasier talking to Roz, you know. He would occasionally have one-sided conversations with his booth engineer because we couldn't hear the engineer. So she goes on to say...
Hey, but who's the engineer?
I don't have any idea who his engineer was, but she did say yours is even better because we can hear both sides of the conversation. So apparently she's likening us to Danny Finkelman and his engineer with a complete both sides of the banter, you know, being audible.
That's what I mean. Who's the engineer in this relationship?
Oh, ours?
Yeah.
I guess it's me since the gear is closer to me.
And I've got the mouse.
I know how to run it better too. Yeah. So what else does she say? She liked our discussion on parenting. It was very interesting, and I'll read to you what she said about our conversation about Frank Zappa's whole parenting model. I totally agree with I totally agree with what you said about Frank Zappa's parenting plan. And of course, when she says you, she means me.
So it's a capital one.
Yeah. Give me a better reason to do it than mine not to do it, and we'll do it. Very smart. I agree with you. Just saying because I said so is a lousy reason to give kids, and it feeds into a teenage rebellion focused on the parent, and that will happen down the road. Mark my words, because I was a rebellious teenager. I know what that's all about. It's much better down the road to keep reaching for the way to communicate effectively without using such shortcuts. John says it's hard to follow the rule, and he's right. It is hard.
Yeah.
But worth the effort, believe me. She goes on to say, my daughter is 22 now. I've had the chance to see the outcome. When you make the effort to communicate effectively, You are more than just keeping control in the moment. You are teaching values, and values are taught bit by bit every day. Parenting is one of the most challenging jobs a person will ever do, especially when. Actually, that should be period. Will ever do.
Yes. Because send in feedback and we'll correct it and send it back to you with red marks.
Well, no, I'm not correcting
A for
her.
Effort, though.
We already talked about this. I said, especially when what? She had started a sentence and forgot to complete it.
No, I completely agree with her. And I don't think that my comments in the last show really do justice to my entire parenting philosophy. It was just an offhanded comment about, yeah, when things get really tough and when you're butting heads with kids, sometimes you just have to say that. I didn't mean to imply that that was my mode of operation in most cases.
Your modus operandi.
My modus operandi.
Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you really have to teach kids how you want them to be when they grow up to be adults. By example, you don't just want to tell them what they're going to be doing all the time. So I don't have a problem with that.
Wow, you rock. What else did she say? John's little insertion of the red fish, blue fish comment was funny. Like, likely only parents would get that. She found our discussion. Yeah.
No. How many people have grown up with Dr. Seuss?
Well, I actually
trillions.
I challenged her on that. I said I have adults who read it frequently. I mean, I have friends who read it all the time. And yeah, so a lot of people are going to get the whole redfish, bluefish thing. She went on to say, your discussion on the airline security issues was interesting. Some complex and weighty issues. Very cool. She liked the way we talked about the whole foreign language mispronunciation issue. And she also said, let's not get Graham Caron. I was talking. I don't know if I said this on the air. I just mentioned this in an email to her about wanting to interview Graham Kerr or some famous chefs, you know, the Galloping Gourmet. And she said, no, don't get him on. Get some famous vegetarian chefs on, to which I replied to her, what famous
crickets? Where's that cricket sound effect?
I know. We need like the sound of an empty room. Because I don't think most of the chefs that we know as famous, you know, Food TV, of course, is littered with a bunch of chefs. And I think they did have one vegetarian cooking show on very briefly, but I can't even remember the name of the chef who did it. And what else did she say? That we're getting close to the end of her comments. And she thought we were really on. She thought that, I think, was our best show. She thought we were really cooking. And I heard that comment.
We're on.
Yeah, I heard that comment from a couple of people. So anyway, that's I think what's happening, from the Great White North.
I think what's happening is that we're just getting more relaxed with the microphones, more relaxed with the format. We didn't plan that one as much as we normally had done with our other shows. So yeah, I think that when we're more spontaneous, it's better.
Spontaneity, good.
Fire bad.
Do you remember that bit on Saturday Night Live with Tonto Frankenstein?
Oh, yes.
And who was the third one? It was Tonto Frankenstein and like Tarzan or something.
Yeah, they all basically had the same response to everything.
They would just grunt at everything. Fire.
Oh, cool. Well, we love feedback. And in fact, we want to keep calling people out there to send in their feedback, text feedback, audio feedback, as well as photos. Photo good. We still have that the photo thing going on. I don't want to call it a contest. My brain is telling me say photo contest, but it's not a contest.
No,
it's
won't be judging you.
No,
we
wager,
love you.
No wagering either.
That's right. All bets are off.
Send in your photos, and we'll put together a little photo montage or a photo gallery of all of our listeners. That way, we can see each other, not just hear our voices.
In fact, I dare you to send some stuff in because I'm getting a little tired of asking and not getting anything. For crying out loud, send us something.
I know. We give and give and give. I've got a bug buzzing
it's
around
me. Same story. Every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd love to see some photos. I know one of our listeners is going to send in some photos because I got an email saying that she would. And so that'll happen. But, you know, there's hundreds of you out there, according to our statistics on our website, and maybe even 1,000 of you, which is really exciting.
Yeah. So, it's unthinkable that we've got 1,000 listeners.
Now our goal is much higher than that, though.
Millions.
Millions, that's right.
Yeah, so send them in. We'd love to see them. So what's going on, Rich? You see any movies this week?
I did. I did see some movies. I saw a bunch of movies. I had some company over last weekend, so I ended up watching a bunch of movies that I had seen before. But I guess I saw them again and kind of got to refresh myself on them. And as always, I went to the Friday night movie at the Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute where they show, I've mentioned this before, show really cool indie films.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually a little confused about the film I saw Friday night. It was called La Niña Santa, The Holy Girl. It was an Argentinian film. And I'm hoping somebody out there, one of our listeners, saw it because I really want you to tell me what it was about. I'm just a little confused. I don't know if the translations were bad, but the movie really didn't compel me. It didn't seem to carry me anywhere with a plot. I found two of the characters utterly repulsive and just did not want to look at them when they were on screen. And I'm just confused. I'm hoping there's a good film in there and somebody can explain it to me. So if you saw The Holy Grail, please tell me.
Yeah, and similarly, I saw on the Sci-Fi Channel a film that was made for the Sci-Fi Channel called Bloodsuckers. Wow. If you want to tell me why that movie got made, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I've seen movies where certainly that's a valid question too. But the movie I do want to talk about is a film that came out in like 2002, I think. And it stars that, I don't know, he's a little guy. He's making his way in the business right
Indie
now.
Indie guy?
Yeah, he's a guy named Jack Nicholson. It's a film called About Schmidt. And if you haven't seen it, I definitely would recommend it. I saw it in the theaters when it came out in 2002 and, you know, maybe watched it on DVD a couple years ago or something. But since I had some friends over, we ended up watching it again. And what a moving film. What a great story. There were so many interesting things going on in that film. And I sort of compare it to a twisted 21st century It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, and I mentioned this to you before, Rich. Not you people out there. I mentioned this to Rich before, that I think that it's got the kind of Kubrick-like pacing. And it's great because I love that kind of a film where you just get engrossed in it because it's almost hyper-real.
It really was. And what I liked about this film, and you know, this may elicit some hateful feedback from people, is what I liked about this film was that Jack Nicholson actually acted. There were so many films in the last 20 years where Nicholson really isn't acting. He's doing Jack. Hey, here's Johnny. You know, that whole evil sort of Jack thing he does.
And sarcasm. Loaded with sarcasm.
Yeah. And it's... what a joy. The guy can really act. He's a major talent. And the final scene in About Schmidt will bring a tear to your eye. It's absolutely unbelievable. And the range of emotions Jack has to go through in about 60 seconds is unbelievable. It's just a great bit of acting.
Yeah, and you know he's a great actor, not just because of the Joker. He's a great actor because of movies like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, still one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah, or Easy Rider. I mean, that's going back to 1969. Or the Shining. I mean, The Shining was great. It was a great example of Stephen King's story translating the film really well, which often doesn't happen. And it's a Kubrick film again. And granted, he was doing the Jack thing in that. That may be the film that actually sort of invented that wicked over-the-top Jack thing, you know?
Yeah, but it fit with the story.
Yeah, well, the guy got possessed by the hotel and he went a little overboard.
Went a little cuckoo.
A little nuts.
For Cocoa Puffs.
That's right.
Wait, we're going to get sued by General Mills or something?
Looks like you've got a...
I got some...
What do you got?
I got a drink. Last week, we didn't have a drink. This week, we've got drinkage.
By drink, you mean vino.
Vino.
Yeah, he has the wine today.
This is a Rosemount Estate Shiraz from Australia. It's 2003, and the reason why I'm drinking this is because this is probably one of my favorite wines. I can drink this every day.
And he does. Often, several bottles.
Come
He's got
on.
A little fridge by his desk at work.
I don't even have a fridge. I have bottles lined up on my desk, so I don't have to go very far.
He's got a little rack of wine. You know, he has like a cellar by his desk, a little wine cellar.
Yeah, I suggest that you all give this a shot because this is some good stuff. You can find it almost anywhere. It's not too expensive, and very, 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 very good.
Well, actually, since I really have nothing more to say about that movie, why don't you play for our loyal listeners, that song you thought was really cool, and you can decant that wine.
Yeah, Rich, I got a question for you first. What do you get when you cross goth rock with ska?
I don't know.
You get Minus Vince.
Minus Vince. That's the name of the band.
Yeah.
They rock. Well, let's listen. We'll be right back. Wow. Pretty Wah. Heavy. Hooah.
Yeah, I got up this morning. I was a little bit logy and...
A little bit loaded? Not again.
No. People are going to get the wrong idea. I don't drink every hour. So I was a little logy and tooling through some music, and that woke me up.
Heavier than I thought it was going to be. Pretty cool. Pretty well recorded. I kind of liked it. Reminded me a little bit of a band I worked with in New Jersey called The Fiends, which started out as like this pop punk band, you know, yep. Sort of like Green Day before we had a Green Day, because they started out...
Before Green Day started doing parodies of Green Day.
Yeah. And then my friend Tim started producing this band called The Fiends, F-I-E-N-D-Z, and added some horns and scotted up a little bit. And really cool. The singer, Jerry Jones, is this amazing sort of baritone, Elvis Costello-ish baritone.
Gravelly.
Yeah. Really cool. Really strong songwriter. And with the addition of horns, they were really cool too. That'd be something I'd recommend. Check out The Fiends. I think their label is Black Pumpkin Records, blackpumpkin.com. There's a lot of really cool stuff on that label. And on the topic of music, I have some interesting news. I have a friend who runs a small record label with a lot of indie artists, mostly folky kind
so
of
So small
stuff.
They have a door and only one wall.
They do. That's right. And it's kind of folky. And... I'm not even sure what the website is yet, but he's going to basically give me the key to the website, a password and a username, and I'll be able to – he's basically given me permission to play any of the music on his website. So that'll give us a pretty I want to say inexhaustible supply of music, but I'm sure that's not true.
Yeah, there's so much music out there.
And anyways, I also – well, one more thing on the topic of music.
Well, before we keep going, I just want to remind people that was minus Vince. I don't know what happened to Vince, but that was minus Vince, and the song was – 10 in the Pen.
We miss Vince, though.
Yeah.
It's sort of like better than Ezra.
He doesn't write anymore.
Why be better than Ezra? Ezra's great. Leave him alone.
The other question I've got is, you know, aren't like 5,000 maniacs enough?
Really? That would normally be enough. I uncovered one of my favorite songs ever that I've ever recorded, ever. And it's this really cool song called Blood is Red by some really talented women. Team, it's a songwriting team from Columbus called Sirens Music. And
women, Sirens.
Get it? Their band was called Diva for a while, too.
Oh, no.
But they're amazing. They're so talented. It's crazy. So I have emailed
them. I can forgive
them
if they're talented.
Yeah. They're amazing. They're not just talented. They're as good players as you're going to hear. And I've emailed them for permission to play the song that I have in my archives, and I have not heard back yet, but I am hoping to soon.
Cool. Well, we're going to break out a little segment that we're just going to try out here, and it's wholesale thievery.
Stupid pet tricks?
No. That doesn't play well on audio.
Oh, maybe it does.
On cue, the dog.
And we didn't do that on purpose. That was just pure chaos in action.
<No. laughs> We're going to do a little thing that we're calling our top five. It's similar to some top fives or top tens you've heard before. But what I want to do is...
Which is also a Letterman thing.
Yeah, it is. But see, I'm ripping off a top five from someone who ripped off Letterman, so it's all good. What goes around
comes around. Second generation.
Yeah. So what our top five is about is... We come up with a question, and we challenge each other to come up with top five answers to this question, and we're going to share our lists.
What's today's list? What's today's question, John?
Today's question is top five favorite episodes from television.
Hmm.
It could be from any show. It doesn't have to be top five or a single show, but any show in across space and time. So what we'll do is we're going to alternate back and forth, and we're probably not going to have any crossovers, but... Rich, what's your number five? We'll put it that way.
Well, they're in no particular order. I'm not going to say this is my fifth or my first, but I'm just going to name the five that I thought of. And, the geek in me is going to come out with my first two. There was a really wonderful Star Trek The Next Generation episode called The Inner Light. I don't know if you know this one. It's the one where that probe took over Captain Picard's mind and he lived an entire lifetime on this other planet called Catan.
And he had that chick.
Well, he had a wife.
Yeah.
And he had a son.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And his son in real life actually... I forget his son's name, but his son in real life played his son like once his child had reached his 20s or 30s. Patrick Stewart's real life son played his character's son on the show.
Wow.
And I thought that was a really strong story, and it got me really involved. And, you know, it was just another one of those wonderful endings where you finally, it all comes together in the end and you get goosebumps, you know. And when I did.
And that was before The Matrix.
Yeah. which I've not seen. I'm a geek who's not seen any of those films.
I think the first one was worth seeing. The second and third ones were kind of, I don't know.
But I have a friend in Florida who dressed up as the woman. What's her name?
Which one?
I don't know. She wore black.
Oh, you mean from The Matrix? Are you talking about the woman from the Star Trek
Who's
episode?
The character from The Matrix?
I think it's Carrie Ann Moss is the actress.
What's the character?
My brain.
I see smoke.
It'll come to me like right after we stop recording.
Well, anyway, I know someone who dressed as that character for Halloween. Good costume.
Yeah, it's cool.
So now it's your turn. What's one of your five?
I think all of my top five have equal weight, but this one's at the bottom. It's a MASH episode, and it's the episode where Henry Blake, the original commander of the unit, when he left.
Oh, and he died.
And he died. Mm. And I mean, I was a little kid when I was seeing this, and it was kind of bizarre to see all of these actors doing such a good job acting like they were devastated at the thoughts of the death of their friend. I thought that actor really died. They did a great job.
Well, the thing that was interesting about that episode for me was that they chose to announce, like on the show, they chose to announce the death while the ER was active. You know, some wounded soldiers came in, so they kind of had to carry on. You know, everybody took their moment to reflect and shed a tear. But then guess what? They got to save these kids, you know, that are on their operating tables. You know, life goes on kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's death all around them. And then when the death of their friend hits them, they just sort of stop in their tracks.
Okay, my next one is from the original series of Star Trek, and it's an episode called City on the Edge of Forever. You know, it won all sorts of awards. It's the episode where they go through that time portal to find McCoy because he's changed time so that there is no Federation in the future, and for example. So
I don't remember that one, but yeah.
Really? That's like the most famous one. Spock and Kirk had to go back in time. It's the one with Edith Keeler, Joan Collins. Kirk falls in love with her, but the whole point of the episode is that she's the focal point in time that McCoy changed so that the future was altered, because they go back to like the 1930s Earth or something like that, pre-World War II. And Edith Keeler ultimately must die in order for the correct future in which the Federation unfolds properly. She must die, so Kirk has to actually witness her death and do nothing about it. You know, and he has already fallen in love with her in the episode.
That's a cool twist. That's in action being the action.
What's the famous sci-fi award that they give out for TV shows? The I don't know, but that one award for best science fiction narrative or story or whatever that year. It was very good. Okay,
cool.
Your turn.
All right, I'm breaking out the Brady Bunch.
Oh,
this is one of many.
My God.
Yes. This is, we were talking earlier about guilty pleasures, but when I was a kid, I used to watch a ton of Brady Bunch. In fact, I can relate almost everything in my life to Brady Bunch.
Yeah, I did too. I just chose not to use any of those episodes.
Well, the other thing is I grew up in a big family and we had five kids in my family, so it felt a lot like the Brady Bunch. So, well, the one episode is, it's my number four, is, hello. It's the episode where they went to the amusement park.
And they lost the blueprints.
And they lost the blueprints. And the best part was the father went to the meeting, this big business meeting, and he went to open up that roll that had the blueprints in it, and it was a poster of Yogi Bear.
hey, boo-boo.
Yeah, that was great.
That's a classic. I remember that one. I hadn't thought about that episode in 20 years. Thank you for.
But wait, there's more for
unearthing that memory.
All right, what's your number?
My next one, whatever number it is. I became a big fan of a television drama called Northern Exposure long after it was off the air. I started watching it as repeats on A&E Network or whatever the hell it was. And it was done by the same people who did St. Elsewhere, the great medical drama from the 80s that kind of gave us ER.
And Denzel Washington.
Yeah, Denzel Washington was on that as well. And a bunch of wonderful actors. And there was an episode of Northern Exposure that sticks out called Kaddish for Uncle Manny. And I guess Kaddish is a Jewish death ritual. Like when somebody dies, a bunch of people get together and say Kaddish or Kaddish, however it's pronounced, in memoriam for the dead person. And the whole point of the episode was that Joel was stuck in Alaska where there wasn't a Jewish person to be found for 100 miles. And his uncle had died, so they needed to say Kaddish for Uncle Manny. And so Maurice, like the rich guy who kind of owned the town, tried to locate 9 more Jewish people because apparently you play baseball with 9 people and you say Kaddish with 10 or something. I forget what the exact number is, but that was actually a line from the episode. So anyway, they ended up finding, you know, the requisite number of Jewish people to say Kaddish with Joel. But then Joel realized, you know, these people don't know my uncle. My uncle didn't know them. I mean, this is so impersonal. And so he chose to perform Kaddish with the town. And each person kind of said, and this is a very, very multicultural town with a lot of Native Americans and different, you know, Eskimo type Native Indian people and a variety of other mixed ethnicities and cultures. So he encouraged everybody to meet in the chapel, and everybody kind of said a prayer in their own, what's the word I want? Their own, I don't want to say religion, but their own
way.
Way. Yeah, exactly. And it was the episode kind of where Joel finally realized that, because he didn't want to be there. He was kind of being held against his will in Alaska. And he finally realized that these people are his community. And, you know, it's only appropriate that he say Kaddish for his uncle in the midst of these people. And I thought it was a very touching, a heartwarming episode.
Yeah, from the serious back to the Brady Bunch.
No.
Yeah. People have no idea how the Brady Bunch influenced me. Okay, remember when they went to Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have lingering memories of tarantulas.
Yes. And that's exactly it. Yeah, it's the Tiki episode. I don't know if that's the actual title, but that's what I call it. It's the episode where they go to Hawaii on some trip, I don't know if it's a business trip or if they went on vacation. Greg is... They find this tiki idol and they've got this tiki curse. Everything's tiki. And then Greg goes on, he's in this surfing contest and the curse of the tiki makes him wipe out. And then there's a tarantula they find in the room all because of the tiki.
Oh, man. Of course, it was all because of the tiki.
All because of the tiki.
Was Don Ho in that episode?
Don Ho must have been. It was the 70s. Hawaii, yeah. And it was Hawaii.
Well, but. Who was the cool guy that was in that episode? You're forgetting a very
important
part.
The narrator for the Michael Jackson Thriller thing.
Vincent Price?
Vincent Price.
Yeah, he made a little cameo in that episode. One of the most famous horror actors of all time. I love Vincent Price.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of Brady Bunch episodes where they basically bring a guest in, Davy Jones being one of the more famous ones. But that's not my other episode.
Davy Jones, I remember that one.
Yeah, Vincent Price.
My next episode is a MASH episode. Ding, ding, ding.
Do we have crossover?
No, we don't have. Well, only in the TV show, not in the episode. There was an award-winning episode. I think it was written, basically starred in and directed by Alan Alda. And it was an episode where he was running off to some battlefield to perform some battlefield surgery or something, and he crashed in his Jeep. And he crashed, like in this tiny, tiny Korean village. And he had suffered some sort of head injury, and he didn't want to go into shock. So he basically the whole episode, because these people didn't speak English, was a monologue of him just talking to these Korean people to stay conscious so that he didn't, because of this head wound, what happens? Your father's a doctor, you fall asleep and you die, right? Or, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you can pretty much go into a coma.
Yeah, exactly. And he knew that. So he was dredging up material from medical school. He was explaining to these Korean people how the opposable thumb works. I do remember that. And whatever he needed to do to stay awake. So it was a half hour of Hawkeye Pierce doing a monologue to these Korean people who didn't understand English, at least in the episode. And it was just wonderful. It was a great, riveting episode. And of course, it ended with him going, getting picked up and being treated, and then him coming back and giving the villagers lots of gifts for allowing him into their home. It was a wonderful episode.
Yeah, and Alan Alda does great monologues. I mean, he's a great actor. I don't remember that particular episode.
It was amazing.
I can picture him doing that. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, he was great.
Wait, here's a story.
Your turn.
Of a boy named Brady. Yes.
Not
three,
again.
3 Brady episodes in my top 5.
And I guess if you know John as well as I do, this all makes sense.
If anyone has watched the Brady Bunch, they know this episode. It's all about independence. It's all about being your own man. And it's all about wearing a fringe vest and having your own bachelor pad. Remember when Greg turned his father's office into his own room because he didn't want to be sleeping in the same room with Bobby and Peter?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he became Johnny Bravo.
Was that the same episode where he had the separate room?
Yeah, okay. I think that was the same episode. I could be blurring these things. It's all like life to me.
Because I remember them being separate, but...
Yeah, well...
Johnny Bravo, I remember. It's a cartoon.
Well, Johnny Bravo, I think that's where they pulled the name from.
They had to.
Yeah,
and
a colleague of mine reminded me of that once because I couldn't remember the tie, but yeah, I think that's where they got the name from.
But the best part about that episode was that they picked Greg to be Johnny Bravo. Why?
Why did they pick him?
Because of the suit fit.
Oh, that's right.
You know, there was a bunch of guys.
I can't believe I didn't remember that.
There was a bunch of guys that auditioned, but Greg was the only guy. They bought this really expensive, crazy, ugly, awful 70s suit, and he fit it. So he was selected to be Johnny Bravo.
You know what? I think that is a separate episode. But anyways, but he had that same persona of Johnny Bravo. but that's just it. That episode where he turned his dad's den.
Into a love shack.
I just can't imagine it. He had even had the swirling lights. He had the fringe vest. He had that groovy headband.
I saw the actor who played Greg.
Barry White
Goodrow. No, that's a guy from Boston. Yeah. Barry. It was Barry somebody. I saw him on whatever, some interview or something years later. And
he was on
The
Surreal Life, I think.
No, Peter was on the Surreal
was?
Life. Yeah, it was Peter.
Oh.
It was Chris Knight. But yeah, they interviewed the Barry, whatever his name was, about that, and he admitted later that those clothes were all his own personal clothes. Those were not from wardrobe.
All right, Rich, what's
my
your last
turn? Well, actually, John inspired me because he said, "What about the Twilight Zone?" And I went, "Well, geez, you know that is one of the greatest shows of all time. How is it that I didn't pick five of them from the Twilight Zone? Because it would be really easy." But I guess the one I've chosen to list as my fifth today is an episode with Burgess Meredith, who was in Five, by the way. An episode with Burgess Meredith called "The Obsolete Man," and he was a librarian, and in this Orwellian future, books were not needed anymore. They were obsolete, so therefore the job of a librarian was obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to – he was to be executed or something. And apparently he was allowed to choose his mode of execution, and it was to put a bomb in his apartment with the timer set to go off at some random time, and he was just going to sit there and read the Bible or something. And his other request was that the judge who deemed him obsolete was to come visit him at some point. And what he ended up doing was locking the judge in the room with him, and he got the judge to squirm so that he said something, which then rendered him obsolete. And then when he showed up for work the next day, there was a new judge, and he was deemed obsolete. I thought it was a pretty powerful film, or not film, but a pretty powerful episode. Rod Serling at his best. There were five seasons of The Twilight Zone, and you know, in the last couple seasons, they started to get a little weak. But man, when Serling was on, he was on. He was just a genius. I mean, if there is a genius, I certainly think he's one of them.
Yeah. Was that the episode when he said, "Women weaken legs"?
Hmm? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Did he call him a bum, Rock?
Help me out here, John.
Rocky?
Oh, yeah. You got to catch a chicken, Rock.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Paulie, not Paulie. Now, who was it? What was his name?
Mick.
Mick. Yeah, Mick. He was great in
Burgess Meredith rules.
He was great in that. He's one of my favorites. I mean, he was in Batman. Oh, yeah, he was in Batman. We were talking about Batman and
the Penguin,
and he was in five Twilight Zones. And there'll be a little one penny prize awarded to anyone out there who can, without looking it up, on your honor, send us an email with all five,
and we will send you a shiny, golden, well, zinc penny.
That's right. And actually, sometime in the future, John and I have been talking about the idea of actually awarding some sort of really t-shirts or something. So one of these days, we're going to get some swag and we're going to have a contest and do it. But unfortunately,
but
not
that's
yet.
Just so radio.
Yeah, not
all
yet.
Right. My top episode.
Ding,
this is,
ding, ding.
And this is from not too long ago. Wait.
Oh, okay. You're killing me.
All right. So my top episode is from ER. Imagine that. Yep. I think this is from the first season. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
And it's the roller coaster ride, because I actually talked about this with you when that episode aired.
No, this is the episode where the guy and his wife come in. The wife's pregnant.
That's the one.
Is that?
Yeah, we talked about it on the phone the day after it happened. You don't remember, but I was like, what a roller coaster ride. Talk about emotional
ups and
downs.
Oh, I thought you were talking about literally a roller coaster ride.
No, just crazy emotional ups and downs. Well, tell him.
Okay, this guy comes in. Well, that's his wife. She's pregnant. She's about to have this child. And then she goes into some complications and then they can't fit them into the OBGYN or the
Obgyn
area. So they're dealing with this stuff in the emergency room. And I think it's Anthony Edwards, Dr. Green, who's handling this thing. And man, he goes through hell with this family. And then, you know, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but essentially the wife dies.
9 years ago.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I think the husband was played by a guy who's now on the West Wing.
Yeah, that was an amazing episode. And we did talk about that, either an email or on the phone, because it went from him. She had some unusual complications.
Preeclampsia. And it's actually not that unusual. I mean, now that I've got kids, it was crazy because I learned about this stuff when I'm watching ER. Then I start having kids and I hear about preeclampsia.
Yeah, it boiled down to
crazy.
Dr. Green missing it, right?
Yeah, he missed it.
He missed it. And the episode goes from thinking the wife's okay, that they figured out what the complication was, and then she crashes and something bad happens, and then they think they get it, and then ultimately she dies. And it was an amazing roller coaster ride.
Yeah, and again, this is before I had kids and I was blown away. I don't think I could watch that episode today.
Well, it was a emotional up and down. I mean, it was just crazy. I don't actually like to see... I probably wouldn't go back and watch it again either.
No.
And that was traumatic.
That was probably the first time I've ever watched a television show that made me upset afterwards. Because normally I don't take television too seriously, but that one pretty much hit me hard.
Well, for me, it's not whether it's on TV or the movies. I mean, a good story will move me regardless of the medium it's shown on.
No, I'm not talking about the medium that it's on. I'm just saying that most stuff that's on television really doesn't
sucks.
Hit you.
Yeah. But I mean, good is good regardless of if it's television or the movies or live drama. Yeah. I have a sixth. I have an honorary number six. Because
snuck it in.
I did. I had.
Oh, great. Then I'm going to throw in a sixth.
You can do that. I had it written down, and then John said, "What about the Twilight Zone?" And I went, "Hell yeah." My honorary number six is any Sesame Street episode with the count. One little bunny rabbit.
Little bunny rabbit.
Yeah, the count rules.
Okay, then my sixth is going to have to be the Brady Bunch.
Wow.
My nose!
Yeah, and then remember the one when they went to the Old West Town?
Oh, yeah.
I forget that one.
It was the Ghost Town.
Yeah. Yep. There were a lot of classics. Getting locked in the freezer with Cousin Oliver.
Well, remember when Cousin Oliver, he dyed Greg's hair with that treatment?
And then the rabbits.
Oh, the rabbits
and
got
then
dyed, too.
He dyed them orange, too, or whatever it was.
Cousin Oliver. It was a desperate attempt.
Sam the Butcher. I actually talked about Sam the Butcher on the website. I wrote a little comedy vignette about Sam. So go and check it out.
Let's just, you know, keep Sam out of this.
All right. Fine.
He's already been tormented enough.
I know. All right.
You know what? I think that's it. That's a show. We're way long, but that's cool because we own it.
That's right. We can do what we want. Next time we're going to come up with a clever and informative and much more compelling top five. We just kind of wanted to skim the surface and broach on the subject without... We just didn't have time to think of something clever is what it boiled down to.
No. See, for me, clever doesn't matter. It's about the conversation. So I think that's it.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tolerating.
They just put up with us.
Yeah. So we're going to remind you again, send in your photos.
Feedback.
At bloodyveg.com.
Audio feedback, photos, words.
Comments.
Anything you got. Just email it to us.
Criticisms.
UPS, we don't care.
Yeah, anything. We are Bloodthirsty Vegetarians.
And we'll see you next time.
Check out our blog, www.bloodyveg.com.
Yeah, there's some funny stuff on there. John wrote some great stuff pretty recently, and it's still there. The blog hasn't crashed yet. Soon, though, we've been having some problems.
Yeah.
And remember, you're listening to VIB.